This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
I want you to go through the whole Quran with me. Join me at bayina.tv.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. إن الله اصطفى آدم ونوحا وآل إبراهيم وآل عمران على العالمين ذرية بعضها من بعض والله سميع عليم إذ قالت امرأة عمران رب إني نذرت لك ما في بطني محررا فتقبل مني إنك أنت السميع العليم رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي والحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين أما بعد once again everyone السلام عليكم ورحمة الله تعالى وبركاته So today inshallah we're going to try to discuss some more things about Al Ibrahim and Al Imran and maybe get up to ayah number 35 The thing that's really important to understand in some of these passages is what you can call biblical subtext. In other words, the audience that Allah is speaking to is somewhat familiar with, or maybe thoroughly familiar with the Bible. They're familiar with the Old Testament, and Allah is speaking to them based on the knowledge they already have of previous scripture. So we saw a lot of that in Surah Al-Baqarah, and we're going to see some of that, especially dedicated in particular, not exclusively, but particularly dedicated to the Christian audience that came into contact with the Prophet ﷺ. It's also important to note that in the Qur'an, Allah is not talking to all Christians universally all the time. There are variations of Christianity, there are strands of Christianity, there are strands of Judaism that the Prophet came into contact with ﷺ. And the Qur'an addressed their particular school of thought, if you will. So it wasn't, for example, discussing Catholicism or the Protestant school or evangelical Christians and things like that. It wasn't in that context that some of this discourse was revealed. These particular brands of, you know, or strands of Judaism, strands of Christianity that the Qur'an was dealing with very, very directly. An example of that is the Jews in the Qur'an, وَقَالَتِ الْيَهُودُ عُزَيْرٌ إِبْنُ اللَّهِ The Jews say that that Uzair is the son of Allah. Vast majority of Orthodox Jews and Hasidic Jews and like the vast majority of schools of Jews don't believe that Uzair was the son of Allah. But there are strands of Judaism, some of them are found in the Arabian region that actually did hold that view. So you can't say, well, the Quran is wrong because the Jews don't believe that and the Quran said that. It's dealing with the group that it's physically engaged with. This is also important because the Mushrikun of Arabia had a strange sort of theology also. They mixed religions together. So they knew some things about angels, they knew some things about prophets, they knew some things about Ibrahim, they knew some things about different mythologies as they traveled and did trade. They knew some things about Christianity and Isa. Some Mushrikun of Arabia even considered Isa alayhi salam an angel. And so all kinds of views were mixed together. And so a lot of times the Quran is clarifying issues based on the confusions that exist in front of them. And in doing so, the Qur'an, the universal lesson of the Qur'an is that we have to be clear about who are we talking to and what confusions do they have, and then how to address that. That's the legacy also left by the Qur'an, by dealing with each group in this, you know, in this specific way. In any case, the focus today is Al Ibrahim and Al Imran, before we go any further. And Al Ibrahim is important, the family or the legacy, the family legacy of Ibrahim alayhi salam. Because up until now, for the most part in the Quran, in Meccan Quran, the role of Ibrahim alayhi salam predominantly, again, not exclusively, but predominantly occurs as someone who championed Tawheed. That only one Allah should be, one God should be worshipped, and shirk must be abandoned, and he's willing to do and go through any trial in his loyalty to Allah. As you start seeing the mention of Ibrahim alayhi salam in Medina in Quran, in Surah Al-Baqarah, in this surah, in a few other surahs, you're going to notice Ibrahim alayhi salam playing a slightly different role. And that is the role of the father of those who believe. The paternal role, the patriarch of those who believe, who prayed for his coming lineage. Right, and it's important for us, of course, we know those du'as of Ibrahim alayhi salam, وَمِن ذُرِّيَّتِنَا أُمَّةً مُسْلِمَةً لَكْ You know, رَبِّ جَعَلْ لِي مُقِيمَ الصَّلَاةِ وَمِن ذُرِّيَّتِي That's even though that's Meccan, but that's a brief allusion. There's more of that in Medina and Qur'an. But for the Christians and the Jews, but right now the Christians, that stuff is really important. And we're going to see why that's important. I'm going to share some biblical research stuff with you, inshallah ta'ala, today. Another important thing to note about Ibrahim alayhi salam is that scholars like Tilman Nigel and others have actually held the view that even the mushrikun of Arabia, they actually believed in Ibrahim alayhi salam as the founder of the Kaaba already. Like that wasn't something that the Christians believed about Abraham and the sacrifice, the story of the sacrifice, but it's something that the Arabs held for a long time. And these Western scholars in discovering that have actually not realized that they've helped the Muslims quite a bit. Why? Because a lot of Christians believe that the son to be sacrificed was Isaac, right? Not Ismail. They consider Ismail actually an illegitimate child, ma'adallah. And so he can't have a blessed lineage, right? But interestingly enough, the Arabs have had for thousands of years, even before you know their exposure to Christianity, they've had the tradition. Now this has been researched. They've had the tradition of sacrificing the animal, performing Hajj, and attributing that to Ibrahim and Ismail. Like they've had that tradition. They mixed shirk with it. They did all kinds of other things with it. But why in the world would Arabs in the desert, with no outside influences, be celebrating this tradition and sacrificing in the name of their father Ibrahim? And that's something Allah actually cites, you know, فَصَلِّ لِرَبِّكَ وَانْحَرْ. You're supposed to cleanse that tradition. They have Salah and they have Nahr, but you have to revive that. فَلْيَعْبُدُوا رَبَّ هَذَا الْبَيْتِ in the same surah, right? Or in the same vicinity of surahs. Why? Because they should, the رَبَّ هَذَا الْبَيْتِ is a reference to Ibrahim alayhi salam. You're the master of this house being the house built by Ibrahim alayhi salam. So in doing so, it's actually establishing that the son to be sacrificed, and that's that biblical stories, if you will, is actually about Makkah. A research that hasn't yet been done, and it's interesting, perhaps somebody will take it up, is actually the view of the Christians living in Medina. The Christians and Jews that lived in Medina, and what was their view of the Kaaba? And what was their, because they came into contact with the story of the Kaaba. It's also known in some accounts that there were Christians living in Medina that had letters from their ancestors, like a letter from their ancestors passed down many generations, that from what we've studied, a prophet is coming here. Wait for him, don't leave this city. He'll come here. And actually one of the Sahaba, when the Prophet ﷺ came to Medina, handed him the letter and said, we've been waiting here for a long time for you. So essentially they saw that as a fulfillment of what was already prophesied. Right, so the even the Christians or the people of the book of before, they have some connection to the region, even though Jerusalem is not physically that far away, but they have some association with this region. And that's, these are important things to understand, because that plays a role in the centrality of the Kaaba, and therefore the real legacy of Ibrahim alayhi salam, who owns that legacy. Inna awla an-nasi bi Ibrahim is the phrase that's going to be used here. The people that have the most right to Ibrahim alayhi salam. Right, so that's an important, you know, undercurrent in a lot of this text. Then, when Ibrahim alayhi salam made the du'a for, you know, Makkah and it to be a prosperous city, it's interesting that in the Bible there's an alternative prayer. It's called, I won't read the prayer off to you, but you can look it up in your own time, inshallah. It's called the consecration of the Temple of Jerusalem. And it's, you know, according to Solomon, and it's something that, you know, Abraham prayed, Ibrahim alayhi salam prays for Jerusalem and its prosperity. And you would think it's almost exactly the same thing, but in our case, it's being, the prayer is being made for the city of Makkah, right? And some argue that perhaps that was changed. Some Muslims argue that may have been changed, that originally that was Makkah, but they didn't want it to be Makkah. You know, and there's some research to suggest that too, like by Imam Hamiduddin Farahi rahimahullah. Wallahu ta'ala alam. But the idea is, if a Christian was listening to the Quran and he was listening to the prayers of Ibrahim alayhi salam for the city of Mecca, they would actually remember the prayers of Ibrahim associated with Jerusalem and say, wait, this sounds all too familiar. There's that parallel is drawn. The other important thing with Ibrahim alayhi salam is the prayer that Ibrahim alayhi salam made. He said, what about all of my children? Wa min dhurriyati. And in the consecrational prayer that the Christians have and the Jews have, especially the Christians believe that the children of Abraham were somehow chosen and saved. They're the saved children. And Jews held on to that view, of course. This concept was called zakhut avat in their tradition, ancestral merit. That's how it translates, ancestral merit. That the Israelites share in the special rank and privilege of the patriarch, meaning Abraham, merely by being descendants from them. Just by being Ibrahim's children, they are chosen, special. Of course, the Quran then, you know, this thing that they're chosen can mutate. it can get, it's nice to believe that we're chosen. Like we believe that we're chosen. Like Allah chose us to be the Ummah of Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So it's not a bad thing to believe that. But when it mutates, what does it turn into? نَحْنُ أَبْنَاءُ اللَّهِ وَأَحِبَّاؤُهُ. We're the children of God and we're the most beloved of God. There's no way He's going to punish us. Right? And it's interesting that in the Quran, Allah Azza wa Jal made it clear, Ibrahim alayhi salam wanted this special rank for all of his children, and he said, no, لَا يَنَالُ عَهْدِ الظَّالِمِينَ. My promise doesn't extend to wrongdoers. So it's, in a sense, the Quran is actually taking that concept of zakhut, of what the ancestral merit, and it's cleaning it up. The Quran is cleaning it up from the tongue of Ibrahim alayhi salam, and Allah saying, no, I didn't give that open license that all of you are blessed. No, the ones of you who do wrong are not blessed. That's not going to fly. And so the original prayer and the original dialogue with Ibrahim alayhi salam is being, again, revived, restored. The Christians call it, it's being retold, as if the Quran is doing a creative retelling of the story. Our view is the Quran is actually going back and telling the original. It's interesting, in the ayah of the Quran, they didn't just say we're the children of God. They said we're the children of God and the beloved of God. Abna'ullahi wa ahibba'uhu. Which is a really interesting parallel, because in the Quran, ha'ula abna' Ibrahim, la ahibba' Ibrahim. Like, in the Quran's account, they may be children of Abraham, but he does not necessarily love them if they do wrong. And by extension, you might think you're blessed by God, but just because you're from that lineage, even your father is not happy with you. He stopped praying for them. He prayed for the children who would believe. You know, وَرْزُقْ أَهْلَهُ مِنَ الثَّمَرَاتِ مَنْ آمَنَ مِنْهُمْ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ. He qualified it as if the ones who don't believe, he doesn't care. So that's an important undercurrent in the text also. I'll cite something from the Bible. This is going to sound awkward to you because the word circumcision is being used quite a bit in this passage. This is attributed to Ibrahim alayhi salam. It's in Romans 4. And even though this might sound a bit abstract to you, at the end it'll make sense why I'm making reference to this. Is this blessedness only for the circumcised or also for the uncircumcised? We have been saying that Abraham's faith was credited to him as righteousness. Under what circumstances was it credited? Was it after he was circumcised or before? It was not after, but before. And he received circumcision as a sign, a seal of the righteousness that he had by faith while he was still uncircumcised. So then he is the father of all who but believe, but have not been circumcised, in order that righteousness might be credited to them. And he is then also the father of the circumcised, who not only are the circumcised, but who also follow in the footsteps. Also the father of the circumcised, who not only are the circumcised, but who also follow in the footsteps of the faith that our father Abraham had before he was circumcised. This is Paul talking about circumcision as a sign of those who believe, right? And circumcision is a big thing in Jewish tradition. And of course, it's made its way into Islam also. The reason this is important, Paul, by the way, later on, because it's such an emphasis on circumcision, later on he said, circumcision is circumcision of the heart, because he didn't want that applied to himself, so he kind of... So that's also later on. But anyway, the reason this is important is because the Quran, describing the religion of Ibrahim, it uses the term Millat Ibrahim, right? On a number of occasions, we found Millata Abikum Ibrahim, or Millata Ibrahima, Hanifa. In Hebrew, Barit Milat is the covenant of circumcision. It's actually literally considered the circumcision, or the covenant of Ibrahim. The term is Barit Milat. And so the word circumcision doesn't just refer to that ritual, it actually refers to the contract between him and Allah, which the Quran then calls Millah. So when they hear the word Millah and Ibrahim together, they're actually also thinking, we think a religion of Ibrahim. But when a Jew was hearing this, when a Christian was hearing this, they were actually from the original Hebrew Bible being reminded of the original agreement between God and Abraham. By the same exact, even the closely related root letter, mim waw lam and mim lam lam in the Hebrew equivalent is actually circumcision. And in our world, it's actually religion. So millata abikum Ibrahim. And by the way, these rituals were the way of someone being entered into a religion back in the day. It was these rituals that were kind of a form of shahada or a form of, baptism and that sort of thing. Then the interesting thing about Ibrahim alayhi salam that's worthy of note is that, Ibrahim alayhi salam slaughtered an animal. When the sacrifice was replaced with, his son was replaced and Allah told him to sacrifice an animal instead, that became a sunnah of Ibrahim alayhi salam and a mark of the people who follow the Abrahamic tradition. Interestingly enough, the Jews, after 70 years after they rejected Isa alayhi salam and the temple was destroyed the second time, from that point on, the Jews completely abandoned animal sacrifice. They actually no longer engaged in any animal sacrifice. The tradition of Ibrahim alayhi salam was utterly discontinued. And this is something only restored and correctly restored by the sunnah of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam. Again, a mark that which you yourselves abandoned of Ibrahim alayhi salam is being restored. So this was also a message being sent to them. Then in these ayat we saw ذُرِّيَّةً بَعْضُهَا مِنْ بَعْضٍ. I'm jumping ahead to Ali Imran. I'll get to Ali Imran in a minute, but I want to emphasize the word ذُرِّيَّة. ذُرِّيَّة, I told you, means offspring and children's 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 children, long generations down the road. They had offspring one of the other. But the word ذُرِّيَّة in Arabic comes from ذَرَّة. And ذَرَّة means seed. And Allah Azza wa Jal told Ibrahim alayhi salam that from his seed will come great many nations. Like the biblical account is, the seed of Abraham is very important. And Allah, particularly, instead of using any other word, use the word ذُرِّيَة, which goes to ذَرَّة, which goes to seed. Right? So there's these undertones that are really cool. And for anybody who was, an astute student of the Bible, like an attention-paying student of the Bible, these wouldn't be lost on them. They would actually catch wind of that. I've talked to you about the meaning of the word Ibrahim before. I'll remind you of Abraham. There's the three components of the word. It's not an Arabic word. And basically it means the leader of many. The leader of many. Okay? And the Quran basically describes him as the leader of many when the Quran says, إِنِّي جَعِلُكَ لِلنَّاسِ إِمَامًا, that I'm going to make you a leader over all of mankind. Paul is saying what? That he leads the circumcised and the uncircumcised. Basically saying the Jews and non-Jews. That's what Paul is saying. And basically Paul is saying, you don't have to be a Jew to now be a people of, from the people of Abraham. He was using that as a basis to then eventually talk about, you don't need to be from the religion of the Torah to be a follower of Jesus. So he was going to take that next step. But we're not going there. Let's talk about Imran now a little bit. The word Imran, I'll read something. This is from Abdul Rauf, who looks at the origins of words that are not Arabic, that are found in the Quran, and traces their original meanings. And sometimes those meanings, obviously everybody's name means something. Your name has a meaning, my name has a meaning. When Allah Azza wa Jal gives names in the Quran or mentions names in the Quran, sometimes they are physical, actual names, and other times they are titles. And it seems if you appreciate that, then you'll see that sometimes the names of certain prophets or the names of certain individuals may not just be names, may actually be a title or a quality that's being described through that name. But we wouldn't know that because we don't know that foreign language, right? So it's important to go back to the original meaning of the word. So the name Imran is originally Hebrew, likely pronounced Amram or Amran. So it is an M at the end or an N at the end, both ways that it's pronounced. In Hebrew, An and Am are interchangeable suffixal augmentatives, meaning at the end you can add Am or An and it's interchangeable. Okay, a parallel to that in the Arabic language is in Tanween, you say un or an or in, right? And there are some tribes of Arabs that didn't add un and in, they added am im. Like their Tanween was a meme at the end instead of a noon at the end. Okay, so when one of them came to the Prophet ﷺ and asked a question in their dialect, he said, Hal minam bir fim siyam fim safar. What he was asking was, Hal min al birri fis siyam fis safar. The lam was replaced with meme. In his case, the lam and meme became, and the Prophet responded in his dialect, "Laysa minam bir fim siyam fim safar," which is his response, "Laysa min al birri fis siyam fis safar," but he replaced it with a meme. So sometimes letters are interchangeable by dialect. So he's saying that the Imran or Amram, as mentioned in the Bible, are interchangeable. Hebrew scholars considered the name Amram to be a combination of Am, which means people, and nation or nation, from the trilateral ayn mim mim, the closest to that in Arabic, ayn mim mim, to be common, which is umum, is also common in Arabic, right? Amma ya'ummu, to be common, so common people, and from ram, which means to be high or exalted. The root letters equivalent would be rwm, rawaw and mim, to be high or to be exalted. Thus they concluded that Amram meant the people of the Most High. Amram literally means the people of the Most High. In reality, the name Amram is the Hebrew equivalent of the Arabic name Imran in both etymology and semantic denotation, because they are both from the same common root letters Ayn, Mim, and Ra. This is important. So this is what the Jewish scholars believed it means, people of the Most High. But he's disagreeing and saying, actually, Ayn, Mim, and Ra in Arabic, that's the root letters, and Ayn, Mim, and Ra, the equivalent letters of that in Hebrew, are the same, and their meanings are the same. So actually, there's a commonness between Imran as understood in Hebrew and as understood in Arabic. And this is going to play a role in how we understand this person's role in life also. Amara, which means to serve, to wait on, to look after, to tend to, particularly a sanctuary or a house of worship. Which is why Allah says, مَا كَانَ لِلْمُشْرِكِينَ أَن يَعْمُرُوا مَسَاجِدَ اللَّهِ. Same root origin, from Imran, Amara, يَعْمُرُوا. So he says, it is not appropriate for people who do shirk to be serving the or maintaining the house of Allah. إِنَّمَا يَعْمُرُ مَسَاجِدَ اللَّهِ. The one who maintains, develops, serves, builds the houses of Allah, the masajid of Allah. So Imran, in their tradition, in the Hebrew sense, someone who serves the temple. In our sense, the one who does, you know, Imran of the house, or Umar of the house, actually someone who takes care of the house. Ammara, yu'ammiru, to take care of, to develop. Okay. So, by the way, it's interesting, this word is also used for how we're supposed to tend to the earth. هُوَ الَّذِي جَعَلَكُمْ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَاسْتَعْمَرَكُمْ فِيهَا. Allah says He placed you on the earth to take care of it, to tend to it. You know how you, like someone who takes care of the masjid is always looking for something to clean up, or always wiping things down, or always putting things in their place, like making sure the house of Allah is always perfect. This is the idea of ta'mir or isti'mar. The modern Arabic meaning of isti'mar is colonization, which has nothing to do with the classical. Which is also another reminder why classical Arabic should be studied and not confused with, you know, Aratools or something. They're worlds apart. You can't look at the meaning in an app and think that this is what the Quran is saying. Those are not the same thing. In any case, Imran, the house of Imran is important because in Jewish tradition, and then eventually in Christian tradition, the early Christian tradition, taking care of the temple was a sacred duty. And people, the most special people in the community, were assigned service to what we call the masjid, they called the temple, they called it the synagogue. But this was a special place. You don't, not just anybody gets to be there. And you know, they use the term priests of the temple, you know, the high priests of the temple. Priests not in the Christian sense, but in the Jewish sense, meaning the ones who studied the Torah and taught it and did engaged in the acts of worship and all of that stuff. Those people were actually, in a sense, people of Imran. And so the word Imran is being used to describe this person. Now, there's quite a bit of a story surrounding him, this person in the Bible. And he's about to be mentioned. وَعَلَى عِمْرَانَ عَلَى الْعَالَمِينَ. Imran, I told you, is the father of Musa alayhi salam. I already mentioned that to you before. That Allah decided that his house should be served and his temple should be served by Imran. Now, we have the Kaaba, right? We have the Kaaba. And at the time of Musa alayhi salam, there was no, like, you know, Kaaba sense, actually. And the temple was a moving thing. It was actually the remnants after Musa alayhi salam. What was left behind by Musa alayhi salam in the tabut, فِيهِ سَكِينَةٌ مِّن رَبِّكُمْ وَبَقِيَةٌ مِّمَّا تَرَكَ آلُ مُوسَى وَآلُ هَارُونَ تَحْمِلُهُ الْمَلَائِكَةُ. What Allah refers to, that tabernacle, they call it. This tabut was something moving, and their Kaaba would move with them. That would move with them. But the ones who would take care of it, and every time they stopped, they built a tent around it and up in the area of worship around it and all of that. That's actually the people of Imran. And so this person, this name became sort of a title. And this is the underlying theme that in Christian culture we have to understand. When somebody historically was important, then later on people called the person who plays the same role as them their name. Like, you are reliving that person's legacy. So lots of people were called Imran. And the family of Imran starts with Musa alayhi salam. And for the Jews, it ended, and by the time Isa alayhi salam came, the legacy had already died out. There was no more of that legacy. Just Zakaria alayhi salam, and that's pretty much it. Zakaria and maybe Yahya alayhi, even Yahya alayhi salam, they rejected. But Allah Azza wa Jalla is going to now illustrate to the Jews and then tell the Christians that unlike the Jews who rejected the final chapter of the family of Imran, Allah doesn't. That Allah actually accepts Maryam as part of the sacred family of Imran, part of the same legacy, not just from a genealogical, like a descendants biologically, but you're carrying the same legacy. You know, for Christians, being from the same bloodline is one thing,
but actually also has some spiritual meaning, which is why Zakariya alayhi salam, for example, la tadharni fardan, you know, and wa anta khairul warithin, you don't leave me behind alone, you're the best one who gives inheritance, and you're the best who's left behind to inherit. But he was worried, inni khiftul mawaliya min wara'i, I'm worried about the inheritors that will come after me. So this idea of family tradition being left behind, those who will not just carry my blood, but actually also carry the tradition that's supposed to be carried. For the Jews, that ended, and Maryam is actually an embarrassment to that tradition. Isa is an embarrassment to that tradition. Allah now comes to the defense of Maryam and Isa, and in doing so, He softens the hearts of Christians, because as far as the Christians are concerned, what the Jews have to say about Maryam and Isa is horrible. It's a terrible thing what they have to say. And now actually the Qur'an is aligning itself in at least, not in worship, but at least in honoring that family and considering them part of the larger family of Imran. And that's an important thing that Allah Azza wa Jalla did here by making reference to Al Imran, Al Alameen. When the Jew heard this, they did not think of Maryam, Al Imran. They thought of everyone up until Maryam, because that's the part they reject. When the Christian heard this, they're like, I wonder if they're gonna do the same things as the Jews did over all other nations of the world. That Al Alameen, Zurriyatan Ba'duha Min Ba'd. And then again the reference that they are offspring, seed one of another. Wallahu Sami'un Alim. And Allah is all hearing, all knowing. And you'll notice these names of Allah occur often when people make dua about future generations. There's a theme in the Quran of Allah being called As-Sami' and Al-Alim on the tongue of Ibrahim alayhi salam, on Zakariya alayhi salam. Here you're going to find, you know, the mother of Maryam salaman alayha, when she's making dua about, you know, the future offspring, generations, coming generations, and Allah being all hearing, Allah being all knowing, is an important name to mention. And of course, I think I mentioned this to you in the Baqarah series. Ibrahim alayhi salam made this dua, and when he was building the house along with his son Ismail. And actually, the biblical story is when Ismail was born, even though Ibrahim was very old, he said in Hebrew, the words are Yashma'il. Yashma'il means God listens. Meaning I prayed for a child and God gave me a child even though I'm in such an old age. And Yashma'il became Yishma'il, his name. And from it we get Ismail, meaning literally Sami'Allah. Allah listens. Right? That literally became his name. So, now we get to the story, the family of Imran. And it would be interesting reading for you. It's kind of a shocking read, almost like a novel you're reading. It's called the Infancy Gospel of James. It's not considered part of the Bible, but an important document nonetheless. It's the only one that describes the birth of Mary all the way to the birth and times of Jesus, okay, in some detailed account. So once again, it's called the Infancy Gospel of James. And I'll give you my version of it, my version of the gospel. Again, it's not considered part of the Bible, but when I read it, I was like, what? This is crazy! How do they say this stuff? But I'll tell you the story, because I want you to know, before the Christians heard these ayat, what did they know? What were they thinking about the story of Isa alayhi salam and Maryam salamun alayha? So basically, you have this man whose name is Joachim, and he's a very wealthy, generous, man in the community, in the Jewish community, and he always gives sadaqah, and he's always, you know, donating towards, you know, sacrifice and all this other stuff, sacrificing of the animals and things. And some, you know, priests come and tell him, some basically scholars of Judaism come and tell him, you don't have a child, and if you don't have a child, you're not furthering the legacy of the children of Israel, and therefore you're not allowed to give charity. So they got jealous of him, and they made him feel like he doesn't have a blessed family because he doesn't give charity. So he got upset because his wife hadn't been able to bear a child for a long time. And so he got so upset that he went out in the desert, set up a tent in the desert, and just started worshiping Allah and said, Allah will feed me, Allah will give me food, God will give me, and until He gives me a sign, I'm not going to come back because Allah didn't give me a child. And this is how the story goes. We don't have stories like this in Quran and Sunnah, but they have them, right? How having children is so important that he just left his wife, and his wife started crying and started saying, I lament to God over two things. I don't have I'm a widow, even though my husband's alive, and I'm childless. And then after he had left, she realized that she's actually pregnant. She's super happy. And then, you know, he comes back, and then he starts giving all kinds of charity, and then, you know, she eventually has a child, and it's a girl. That's Mary, that's Maryam.
So here she's called the wife of Imran. Imra'at Imran. Imran is not used as his name. And he started, he gave more than anybody else to build the masjid or to serve, right? So Quran uses, instead of using his name, uses the word Imran. And some of our ulama said, no, the Christians got it wrong. His name is not Imran, or his name is not Joachim. His name is Imran. Allah is correcting the Christians. Allahu A'lam. I would argue, actually, no, Allah is using a title for him. That he was playing the role of building the masjid or donating more than anyone else, and that's why Allah associated him with Imran. And the other reason it's important to do that is because Allah is now going to finally give to him what Allah gave to Imran, meaning Imran was given a child who was given Torah. And he's now being given a child, Maryam, whose child is now going to be given Torah and Injil. So it's the start of Torah and it's the end of Torah and Injil. It's the opening and closing of the revelation history of the Israelites. So it's Imran's family legacy completed, which is why the name is being used. So and it's also important, you know, because the Christians are being talked to, if you open up a number of the books of the Bible, they begin with genealogy. So for example, Angelica Norbiet mentions it is certainly no mere coincidence that the gospel according to Matthew also begins with matters of genealogy, more precisely with two different genealogies, while the first one mentions David and Abraham as the progenitors of Jesus, meaning the ancestors of Jesus are mentioned in the beginnings of the Bible. This is the section that's talking to the Christians, and it began with Adam, Nuh, family of Abraham, family of Imran, genealogy, and then the guidance. So it resonates with them in the way that they, even though that's written by people, it's not a book of Allah. The books of the Bible, they're documented by people. But regardless, they are familiar with learning in this way, and Allah used the style that they're familiar with and used it in the Quran. And they're like, oh, it begins with genealogy too. Oh, okay, I'm familiar with this. And it kind of puts the guard down again. Now, the next piece of this, the story. So she has this child. And then Zakariya alayhi salam, she dedicates this child. Everybody's happy that this child is born. And because this was the most generous and most righteous man in the community. And so they're dedicating this child to the service of Allah, even though she's a girl. Everybody's okay with it. By the time she turns 12, there's a convention. There's a meeting of the scholars and the priests. They say, well, we can't have her in the temple because she'll desecrate the temple. Because she's a female, she can't be there. So they make an exception from her because of Zakariya's suggestion. They build a special quarter for her. She's living there until 16. Then when her menses come in, they say, well, we can't have her here. This is their version. We can't have her here. She has to go. So we should marry her off. So they did some kind of a ritual, and they decided that this man named, this is about Maryam now, who's 16 years old. They say, well, this man named Joseph, we've chosen him to marry her. And this man was old. And he was already married. He also had a couple of kids, grown. So they came to him and said, you should marry Maryam. He said, she's 16. I'm an old guy. Everybody's going to laugh at me. I'm not doing this. I'll be the laughing stock of the Israelites, according to the infancy gospel. I'll be the laughing stock of the Israelites. And they said, well, okay, if you can't marry her, at least take risk. Because, we've all prayed and your name has come up. So we know you have to take care of her. So you take what the Arabic term is kafala. You become her kafil, you become her guardian, because we can't keep her in the temple anymore. Keep her as a virgin, keep her sacred, don't marry her, but you're still responsible for her. You're basically her wali, her kafil. So he brings her into his house. And he says, you stay here, I do a lot of construction work, I'm going to be gone building homes for some time, but you're welcome to stay here because the temple has given me, the masjid has ordained me to be your guardian, so you be here and you be good. Okay, he goes away. In the meantime, the angel comes to Mary and tells her that she's going to have a baby, and she says, no man has touched me, and he says, it doesn't matter, God has decided, that the one that will save the Israelites from their sins is going to be in your womb. And so she gets pregnant. And as her belly is swelling, she's getting bigger and bigger, she starts getting worried about what's going to happen, what are people going to say. Anybody who asks, she says, no man has touched me, this is from God, this is from the God of the Israelites. And then Joseph finally comes back. And he comes back and he's like, what have you done? What are people going to say? I was supposed to guard this, this virgin, and this was a sacred duty given to me. And, the same thing that happened to Adam and the serpent got to Eve, well, the serpent got to you. And he compares that story. and says, what kind of woman are you? How can you have been in the service of God's house all this time and you have done this? You should be ashamed of yourself. And he's like, what should I do? I can't go and tell them that I got her pregnant because that means I'm messed up. And if I go and report her as she's committed zina, then an innocent child will be killed. I can't do that either. I don't know what to do. So he decides to take her away out of town into a cave somewhere. And so he takes Mary into this cave, and now she's about to, and when they're riding on the camel, she says, I'm about to give birth on the way to the cave. So he hurries her into the cave, sits her there, finds some stranger, and says, I need your help, some midwife. You need to give birth to this child. And so they go into this cave, and she's giving birth to the child, and the entire cave fills up with light. And the lady who says, whose child is this? And she says, Mary still says, I swear no man has ever touched me. And she says, I don't believe you. And she gave her a physical exam and says, you're right, no man has ever touched you. I don't know what that means. But then God, and I'm like, what is this? So anyway, and then her name is, I forget, Salome or something like that, that woman's name. And then God speaks to Salome and says, you have been blessed to deliver a child that will save all of the Israelites from their sins. And she's like, how blessed I am that I saw this miracle of light and all of this. And this is how he's born. And then in the meantime, the king Herod saw, like Pharaoh saw a dream that a child will come to threaten his kingdom. Herod sees a dream that, a child is born that is going to be a prince. And he's worried about this prince. So he's going around asking, whose child is this that needs to be killed? And he's asking for Zechariah, for his son. And, where did you keep your son? And interrogation's happening. This is basically the story. I'm giving you the juicy parts that are like, whoa, what is this? This is what they believe happened. Now, the Quran comes and tells a completely different story. Completely. And by the way, at the end of that story, you know what it says? This is James. I told this story at this time and I decided to record this story, as I understood it or whatever. He puts a disclaimer at the end. This is from me. It's not the word of Allah. This is my word. He put that disclaimer at the end. And that's the key that I wanted to cite for you. Allah is telling the story from whose point of view? His own. His own. Not the history according to the Bible, according to Matthew, according to James, according to this, according to that. This is what happened according to Allah. Now, Western scholars will say the Quran has a retelling of the story. We say the Quran has the actual telling of the story. إِنَّ هَذَا لَهُ الْقَصَصُ الْحَقِّ. This is in fact what really happened. To know what really happened, you'd have to be there. And the only one who actually was there is Allah, who's still a living witness to what happened then. Right? So when he tells the story, this is what actually happened. This is the confidence with which the Quran tells the story. When the wife of Imran, when the woman of Imran, Imra'atu Imran, why is she being called again Imra'atu Imran? Even though she's the wife of Joachim, because he plays the role of Imran. Okay? When the wife of Imran said, Rabbi inni nadartu laka ma fi batni muharraran. Master, I am dedicating whatever is in my belly, whatever's, boy or girl, doesn't matter, whatever's in my belly, I dedicate to you as a nadhar. The word nadhar is being used. Ma yajibu fil jarahat min ad-diyat. The word nadhar is used when you owe someone a penalty because you hurt them. Like, and nowadays, if you owe somebody money because they want a lawsuit against you, that would be a nadhar. Damages owed to somebody because of harm you afflicted, right? The penalty you have to pay. That's called nadhar. The Iraqis used to call it arsh. لِقِبَلَ فُلَانٍ nadhar. This was used in the sense that somebody owes me money because they damaged me, they hit me on the head or whatever. This is why the word was even used. Specific damages were dedicated by Umar radiallahu anhu, Uthman radiallahu anhu, in their era for different damages that were done. They used to call it nadhar also. Right, so if somebody's head injury broke a bone or something like that, there's a specific amount that you owe. They set these prices on nadhr. When nadhira al ibn yaj'aluhu abawahu qayyiman wa khadiman lil kanisa aw al muta'abbad min dhakar aw untha. Nadhira is used for a boy or girl that has been dedicated to the service of a temple or a church by the parents. Sometimes we do this in South Asia. I haven't seen this done anywhere else really. We do it. This child I'm going to dedicate to just becoming a hafiz, or this child is just going to become servant of the, especially if they're born with some kind of a deficiency, then definitely dedicate. This one's for Allah wala bacha hai wala, right? Ya Allah ke naam kar diya, right? So this is nadhar to Allah, but they don't do it before the birth, they do it after the birth. There's an issue, okay, now give it to Allah, which is a disgusting practice, by the way. Al-ma'na al-mihwari, تبعتاً تلتزم أو يخشى من لزومها. The overall meaning of the word is something that you owe, or and you fear if you don't pay it that there's going to be damages. Okay, that's basically the meaning of nadhr, is something owed, and there's a fear that if I don't pay it, there's going to be consequences. Okay, and from it came النذر إجاب شيء على النفس تبرعا, to mandate something on yourself that is supposed to actually originally be voluntary, but you voluntarily imposed on yourself that you're going to do this. Ya Allah, if you get me married to this person, I will fast for 40 straight days or something. I don't know how that works, but whatever. If you did that, then fasting 40 straight days was not mandatory on you, but since you talked to Allah and said you're imposing it on yourself, it became wajib on you. Now it's held against you. Okay? So, وَمَا نَذَرْتُم مِّن نَذْرٍ فَإِنَّ اللَّهَ يَعْلَمُهُ وَمَا لِلظَّالِمِينَ مِنْ أَنصَارٍ. Whatever you spend, whatever oath you make to Allah that I'm imposing it on myself, Allah knows it. Don't play around with it. Don't just say, ah, just kidding. No, later. Don't do that. So, don't even get into it. Because at the end of that ayah in Surah Al-Baqarah, وَمَا لِلظَّالِمِينَ مِنْ أَنصَارٍ, wrongdoers don't get any helpers. So don't mess with Allah and make these promises. Sadaqatan aw ibadatan aw ghayriha. Anytime you make a dedication like that as an act of sadaqah or ibadah or anything else, when nadhira ma tu'tihi, and nadhira is what actually that you give. So what she is giving Allah is whatever child she has will be dedicated to the service. There were some people that were just khuddam of the house. They were just there to do nothing else. They were just going to study the book of Allah and teach the book of Allah and worship Allah, and that's all they were going to do. So this is the nadhr that she made. فَتَقَبَّلْ مِنِّي, then accept it from me. So you'll notice here there's an emphasis on women. The father has been mentioned, but really the one talking is the mother. And the father should be deciding what should happen with the child. He's the guardian, he's the provider. But actually, who's making the dedication? The mother is making the dedication. And then, of course, what is born is a girl, right? And for all this time, you know, for the Israelites especially, lineage is from the father. Lineage comes from the father. And the father is who's important. Allah is removing that from the equation and saying to Allah, actually, the real lineage is faith. And gender is irrelevant. And in a sense, he actually even honored that people can be from the family of Imran, meaning the family of the prophethood of Musa alayhi salam, even if they're a girl and they're about to have a child, that's still part of the family of Imran. That's still part of the same legacy. You would think, you know, when a girl gets married or a girl has a child, then the child's identity only belongs to the one that gave the father who gave the name. But the lineage of Iman is different. The lineage of Iman is actually for both genders. And Allah opened that up really beautifully by describing the wife of Imran and then later on Maryam salamun alayha. So inni nadhartu laka ma fi batni muharraran. Muharrar is an important word. Atiqan khalisan li ta'atik la asrifuhu fi hawa'iji. Someone who is hurriya in Arabic means freedom. Right? Tahriru raqaba, to free a neck. That's the masdar used in the Quran. Muharrar is the ism maf'ul. What it means, whatever is born of me is going to be set free. Set free from what? From all other obligations. This child will not have to worry about where the food is coming from. This child will not have to worry about where the clothes are coming from. Anything else, the only worry they will ever have is worshiping you and serving you and teaching your scripture. That's it. That's the only thing that I want them to do. Every other expense we'll take care of. Muharrara. You know, this idea of tahreer, I've seen it happen in some families. I knew a young man, I won't mention because he'll get embarrassed. I knew a young man in some country that shall not be named. Brilliant memorizer of Quran, brilliant reciter of the Quran, brilliant student of the deen, like photographic memory, brilliant teacher, like he's just talented. And his family's multimillionaires, they're all kinds of businesses. And they saw that this kid is just special. He's got this talent. So they pulled him out of the businesses. You're going to study Islam full time. And your house and your family and your account or whatever, you don't ask where the, you just take care of your needs. We're not going to, you know, he doesn't wait for a paycheck. He doesn't do any of that. When he travels, he just says, I need to go here to do this da'wah thing. And the family just does it. And he doesn't live a lavish life. He lives a very simple life. And by his own insistence. But the point is, people in his family decided that he should be muharrar. Like they see in him something that serves Allah's deen. So he should be muharrar. And that's an important lesson here. I know I'm taking way over my time, but this idea of tahrir is important because nowadays you have people that say, hey, I want to do Islamic work. Can you make me muharrar? Can you pay for my education? Can you sponsor me in this? Can you cover all of my expenses? Because I'm going to do Islamic work. I'm going to do da'wah work. That's why. Can you, you know, get me a business class ticket? Can you, put me up in this hotel? Because I need to be muharrar. Dude, you don't decide that. You don't choose yourself and nominate yourself as someone so worthy of Allah's deen service that others should, you know, go fund me. Hold on a second. How are you, you know, that's actually a form of self-righteousness that we should be aware of. When your service is so powerful and so recognized that you yourself were, people came to you and said, you know what, you need to stop doing what you're doing, just do this. Don't worry about that. Pull yourself away. You need to focus on this. That's when, that's your muharrar, not mutaharrir. It's an ism maf'ul for a reason. And if your family decided that, like your family can do that, your family can say, you're nominated, you're going to do this. We want you to do this. This is all I want you to do. You know? And there are some remarkable scholars around the world, remarkable people around the world whose family's doing this for them. Their family's supporting them because they see them as muharrar. But don't declare yourself muharrar. Don't do that. Don't ask anybody else for money to do, you know, for your own thing. If you can stand on your own feet to the best of your ability, do it. You know, do it. And I've seen it, unfortunately. And I've actually even, people came to me and said, can you sponsor my education in this, that, and the other? And I did. I said, okay. I hadn't really thought about this much and I didn't want to give them this talk. But I you know, somebody's motivated, do it. And guess what happens? Nothing. Nothing happens. They disappear into some this, that, or the other. Why? Because when you start from the wrong foot, and you start in the take the first wrong step, then you can't just recalibrate later on. You have to start from the right place, you know? I'm reminded of the late Dr. Isar Ahmed, medical doctor, successful medical doctor. And his family basically told him, and he told his family, I'm not doing this anymore. I can't. I just got to do what Allah's given me a gift in. Millions of people affected by his work. And he just left his career behind. My teacher, Dr. Abdul Samin, my Arabic teacher, was a dentist. And he has a couple of daughters, his family to provide for and like responsibilities, but just an absolutely incredible teacher. Just a really remarkable teacher. And just, he was just pulled away from it. Like, it's not even you decided. It's just this tsunami comes and takes you and just says, you're going to do this work. And she, before the child's even born, says, I'm not even going to let my child see the other side of the life. This is the only life she'll know. إِنِّي لَكَ مَا فِي نَذَرْتُ لَكَ مَا فِي بَطْنِي مُحَرَّرًا فَتَقَبَّلْ مِنِّي. Then accept it from me. Notice, interestingly, she didn't say except from her. Except from me. Because you can't control anybody else. First and foremost. You could dedicate and serve someone else and help someone else, but that doesn't mean they'll do what is needed. More than anything else, Ya Allah, make me, accept me. And by the way, if you accept me, automatically she's included. Why? Because if she's truly muharrar, and if she's truly a nadhr, and you accepted all of that, then you won't let my nadhr go to waste. And you won't let her tahrir go to waste. So just accept from me. فَتَقَبَّلْ مِنِّي إِنَّكَ أَنْتَ السَّمِيعُ الْعَلِيمُ. And by the way, قُبُول also, an implication, a spiritual implication of that is when Allah accepts someone, then they become acceptable to others. A qubul from Allah is qubul of people around you. And understand that the qubul of Allah doesn't work the same way the qubul of people works. Meaning when Allah accepts someone and when people accept someone, sometimes it's two different things. Sometimes what happens is in their own lifetime, nobody accepted them. But because Allah accepted them, their acceptance lasted many generations after that. The people who insulted them, the people who put them down disappeared, and their honor outlived all of them for centuries and centuries. What happened with Maryam herself? Humiliated in her lifetime. Humiliated. Accused. And what happens with her thereafter? Honored until judgment day. Right? So when Allah gives qubul, His qubul is much bigger than what a human being can ever give. He gives that acceptability that's much wider. And we ask Allah Azza wa Jal that He accepts all of us. فتقبل مني. So she begs Allah, accept from me and accept wholly from me. اقبل مني, that's the, you know, the مجرد form, تقبل, the تفاعل form, accept wholly from me. You are the ultimate one who hears everything, knows everything. إِنَّكَ أَنْتَ السَّمِيعُ الْعَلِيمُ. Like I was mentioning before, these two words, these two names of Allah occur, especially when du'as about the future, about lineage, about offspring occur, you'll find these names occur. May Allah Azza wa Jal accept our du'as from us, and may Allah Azza wa Jal help us identify people that should be muharrar, that should be dedicated to the service of Allah's deen, and support them in whatever way we can. Barakallahu li wa lakum fil Qur'an al-Hakim, wa nafa'ani wa iyyakum bil ayati wa dhikr al-Hakim. A number of texts in the Eastern Church present Mary as belonging to the lineage of Harun. That's also an important note, that Mary belongs to the lineage of Harun alayhi salam. Why is that important? Quran will later on call her what? Ya Ukhta Harun. It's going to pick up from that tradition that is known to them and their scholars. Whereas, you know, especially in Surah Ali Imran, the two stories of Zakariya, or rather the story of Maryam and Zakariya and Musa alayhi salam are been fused together. And the way this fusion has happened is actually very similar to the Gospel of Luke. So it's picking up from the Gospel of Luke and then, you know, correcting that narrative. So those are the few other Christian undertones that I wanted to make sure you guys are aware of. Barakallahu li wa lakum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.